Hello, and welcome back to Sailing Beyond Knowledge Radio, episode 50. I'm your host, Carlita, and today this is a show which kind of summarizes all the work that we're doing here in Ecuador by Radio Ecuador, because I was interviewed on there, the tables were turned, and for the first time I've been interviewed about the work we're doing and for Evolve to Ecology by Ashley Rogers and Michelle Blanchard of Ecuador Radio, so that you can find their website on overseasradio.com. Ashley Rogers and Michelle Blanchard, EcuadorAtYourService.com. And Ashley Rogers is a three-time award-winning documentary film writer, and her most recent film was shot in the Sahara Desert with the indigenous Tuareg tribe and Sufi Ambassadors of Peace, and premiered at the United Nations 2011, which is amazing. And so she's worked as a film director, and she's worked for many prestigious US channels, TV channels. And it's quite interesting. Ashley has joined up with Michelle, who graduated from McGill in Montreal. And he's had a very interesting background in public relations. And he worked as a model and also as a designer, and they basically joined up in Ecuador to create Ecuador at Your Service, which is a travel consultancy and concierge service for real estate and adventure seekers, and they set up Radio Ecuador for expats. So that's just how I happened to be invited onto their show, because I'm doing work here for rainforest conservation with Evolve to Ecology, along with other things, and I live here in Cuenca. I'm based in Cuenca at the moment, although I have to travel up to the rainforest from here. So yeah, basically this is Ecuador at Your Service on Sailing Beyond Knowledge. Other issues such as sustainability and free energy and all these subjects that we've talked about many times on Sailing Beyond Knowledge Radio. So this is really kind of a special show that sort of summarizes everything that has happened on Sailing Beyond Knowledge over the past year. I talk about specific guests that we have interviewed and their importance in sustainability and suppressed sciences and free energy technologies. And I really enjoyed being on their show. Thank you, Michelle and Ashley, so kindly for taking the time to interview me and sharing this important information for conservation of the rainforest and Evolve to Ecology. Because that's primarily why I'm here in Ecuador, to continue conservation work with the rainforest. And so we were talking about Evolve to Ecology, my foundation, and the project, some of the projects that we do. You can find more details at evolvetoecology.com. And basically, if you want to visit Radio Ecuador, it's an interesting introduction to overseas living. So you just go to overseas.radio/Ecuador-at-your-service. So it's Ecuador at Your Service. And you can find the last 2 hours there are dated June the 19th, 2012, hour 1 and 2. There's also an archive there of the show. But I decided to put the show on Sailing Beyond Knowledge because this is the 50th episode, and it just beautifully summarizes all the work we've been doing with Evolve to Ecology and Sailing Beyond Knowledge and more. So this is a good introduction or reintroduction for us to come back to Sailing Beyond Knowledge and continue our work and research and sharing important information. So thanks to those of you that have stayed patiently supporting Sailing Beyond Knowledge through the last year, and it's been a very challenging year indeed. So I'm really happy to be back, and I'd like to just restore some of the lost information that was talked about on Radio Ecuador with Ashley and Michelle, because understandably we were cut off three times and had some very strange interference, a little of which you can still hear on this recording, because I just want people to see that sometimes it's not just coincidence when we're talking about free energy and sustainability and other issues. Some of the interference is purposeful, believe it or not, and it sounds very conspiracy theorist, but it's true. It happens too often to be a coincidence. So I just wanted to go over a few things that were interfered with or dubbed out, or with the strange crackling noises when we were talking about free energy. And at that time we were talking about Jason Verbelli and Sir John Searle, and also just as an example, how nuclear power generates so much waste. When I was asked about what does free energy mean, I said before we talk about free energy, I wanted to highlight some food for thought here, and this information is also on the Evolve to Ecology website. Just for example, this is how people should really consider the waste produced with nuclear power. In the US alone, as 5% of the world's population consumes 25% of the world's nuclear power. So the amount of nuclear waste created per person per year is 40 grams. An incredible amount. And it seems lunacy when you learn that it takes 3 million years of nuclear waste to decay. Globally, we have 438 nuclear power stations in use on planet Earth, and one nuclear power station generates 3,000 tons of nuclear waste per year. This means that altogether 1,314,000 tons of nuclear waste is generated globally each year. And it can take up to $20 billion just to build one nuclear waste repository. One nuclear waste repository, $20 billion. And there's no accounting for the thousands of nuclear warheads in existence. So why are we spending billions to turn planet Earth into a nuclear time bomb? And at that same time, people like us in the free energy movement are called crackpots and lunatics. I mean, who really are the crackpots and lunatics here? And this is the point where there was major interference when I said that the petroleum companies such as Shell Oil make around £1 million an hour. And they won't be happy. They wouldn't be happy with someone coming along with a free energy device for a few thousand pounds or less that produces all the energy you want for a house or even an industrial complex. I'm just restating a few things that Patrick Kelly has said in episode 23, Scratching the Surface of Free Energy, which you can find in earlier archives of this podcast. So then we go on to talk about examples, really simple examples of how you can extract electricity from the air. And most people, when they think of free energy, they think of simple devices such as wind power and solar energy. But again, you know, that it's really because science, this kind of science has been repressed. People don't realize how easy it is to access energy get an output without putting much into the system, because most people think the law of conservation of energy is you cannot take more out of the system than you put into the system, which isn't true, again, which Patrick Kelly explains, and he talks about Hermann Plosten, a German scientist who can show you how simple it is to take energy out of the air or the ether with an aerial, a simple aerial which has an output of hundreds of kilowatts and no input. And it's a really simple, basic device. You can get a blueprint of the Plosten aerial from Patrick Kelly's site or from the OverUnity website. And there's more information in the summary to this podcast. I include a transcript of the show so that you can read more details and find websites, the free energy websites that we include here. And I hope you enjoy the interview. It's kind of strange being interviewed when you're used to being the interviewer. But I try to put in as much information of other people's work and the importance of their work as possible, because that's my main focus. Okay, so thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the show with Ashley and Michelle.
Welcome to Ecuador Your Service. This is Michelle.
And I'm Ashley.
Ashley is in New York right now, and she'll be back next week.
It sounds like a broken record. Absolutely. I am coming home, though, and I'm going to be back for a long, long time, at least until November. So you'll be sitting next to me soon.
Wonderful. We miss you, Ashley. We miss you so much. And you're listening to us on the Overseas Radio Network. I am in Cuenca right now, the gorgeous city, and it's been so beautiful these days. We have a wonderful show for you today. I'm really privileged to have Carlita Shaw, and who is a Renaissance woman who moved here recently from London, and she'll tell us all about what she's doing. When I say Renaissance woman, I'm not kidding. There's nothing that this woman cannot do.
Well, so, and I mean, just testament to that, we have never ever had someone on both hours, and yeah. So we didn't know where to stop with Carlita, so she's going to be on hour one and hour two.
Absolutely. There's so much to talk about. So welcome, Carlita. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashley and Michelle. It's a real privilege and honor to be invited and to talk about the issues we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a lot about ecology. We're going to talk about sustainability. We'll talk about all that kind of stuff.
The Shaman's Apprentice Project and all kinds of hypnotherapy. I mean, it goes on and on. It's so wonderful. And also, Carlita has a radio show that we'll talk a little bit about. And I think there's so much information, Michelle. What do you think? We should probably reprint all of this on our website, because absolutely, I don't think anybody's going to be able to keep up, including me.
I'm actually definitely going to do a blog about this after the show and recap what's going on. So welcome, and we're so happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit, just to start, where are you from? Like, where did you grow up? You obviously have a British accent,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's very noticeable. I'm originally from London, the UK, and I lived in the city half my life, and near the ocean the other half. I loved Cornwall. That was inspiration for me too. And I grew up with my mom, and she was an artist, and I had a kind of very non-conformist lifestyle. We moved around a lot, and my ancestry is mixed heritage. I've got some European, French and Italian and Welsh and Irish, and my grandmother's from India, so
It's like United Colors of Benetton, like everything rolled in one, right?
But, makes you much more interesting, I'm sure.
And by the way, just so the listener know this, for whatever it was worth, you are so beautiful. You are absolutely, it's incredible. So you
inside
were brought up,
and out.
Yes. And so your background, you went to art school initially. Is that correct?
It was just something that came very natural to me because, you know, my mum's an artist and I grew up watching her paint, so I learned a lot from her. And, you know, I was very natural with it, but it just didn't feel like it was really where I was going. And then I had a tumor when I was 14, and then I had another one when I was in my mid-20s.
Like a tumor, like a physical, yeah, like a cancer thing?
Well, I was kind of, I'm a rare medical anomaly, actually. I have had a lot of benign ones, but the last one I had was unprevalent. But basically, I had an operation which interfered with my art school years. So I was recommended to take a year out and recover, and I was on liquid food for a year. So I had some time to settle and think and rethink about what I wanted to do. And ever since I was a child, I've been obsessed with the rainforest, and it's something I was always passionate about. So I went back to university and studied environmental biology and environmental science. And that's also why I've got a great interest in alternative health therapies and Qigong and hypnotherapy, because Qigong is one of the initial therapies which is recommended for cancer cures and AIDS.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
In China, they had Qigong hospitals which were for the cures of cancer and AIDS, and they would give patients Qigong. And this was so successful that the government closed the hospitals down, because obviously they had an interest in investment in pharmaceuticals.
But, you know, I practice, well, I call it Qigong, but you can also call it Qigong. And just for the listeners that are not aware of what it is a practice that started in China, and it's almost like Tai Chi, but much more powerful, and it has to do with specific movements that you do. And those movements actually connect to your entire body and the meridians in your body, and I've been doing it for years. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, if you've been doing it for 20 years, I think you'll know more about it than
Well, you know, I don't want to date myself here, but yeah, it's about 20 years. So let's talk a little bit about Ecuador. What made you move to Ecuador? What was the original, what was the initial reason for you?
Okay, the initial reason I'm here is because of the foundation we set up. I started another foundation.
Who's we?
Well, me and Pascual Conchicoy, he's my initial inspiration for setting up this foundation, which I'll talk about him in a moment.
Okay. And so you moved here because of the foundation that you set, which is called Evolve to Ecology. Is that correct?
That's right.
And how did you meet Pascual?
Oh, okay. It's a long story. I only moved here a year ago, but I have a 10-year history with Ecuador. When I was doing my wildlife biology degree, we were recommended to do a year out work experience with different organizations and, you know, whatever we wanted to connect to in the future with our careers. So I was involved in going on to a project with a woman called Sarah Dixon, who in 2002 was documenting the culture and lifestyle of the Shiriar people, who are the most recently discovered indigenous rainforest people in Ecuador.
They're called the
Shiriar, not Shuar, not to be confused with the Shuar,
okay,
which is S-H-U-A-R. Shiriar is S-H-I-W-I-A-R.
Okay, uh-huh. And so you were involved with them?
Yeah, so basically what happened was the Shiriar were discovered by a group of evangelics 40 years ago who went deep into the Ecuadorian jungle on the border between Ecuador and Peru. And the Shiriar territory was there, and they made the Shiriar people wear clothes and study the Bible. And they took one very promising child out of the jungle with them. You have to fly into this territory, by the way, from Shell.
Wow. That's, you know, let's keep the thing there, because we're going to have to go to commercial. We'll be right back. We are talking to Carlita Shaw, and we're talking about the Shiriar tribe that you met, that has only been discovered 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So stay tuned. This is really exciting. I can't wait to hear the rest. So stay tuned. You're listening to Michelle and Ashley and Carlita Shaw.
sailingbeyondknowledge.podomatic.com. No www.HTTP stuff to sailingbeyondknowledge, all one word, .podomatic.com.
Welcome back to Ecuador Service. This is Michelle and Ashley, and you're listening to us on the Overseas Radio Network. We have the great privilege of having an incredible guest today, Carlita Shaw, who is recently moved about a year ago to Ecuador and who is part of a movement or project called Evolve to Ecology. And just before the break, we were talking about this tribe that was discovered in Ecuador about 35 years ago, and we were talking about Pascual and how he was almost taken and to become a priest. So welcome back, Carlita.
Thank you.
So happy. So let us continue the story here, because I'm riveted here.
First of all, can I give listeners Pascual's website for the Shiriar people? So
please do.
People can actually go to the Shiriar territory and spend time there with the Shiriar tribes. So their website is www.ikiam.info. That's IKIAM.info.
Right, IKIAM.info.
Yeah. And then what it does is it takes you to a Hispanic site, right, and you can translate it into English.
There is an English option, yes, that's right.
So www.ikiam.info.
Yeah, the site's actually available in French as well.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm French, so there you go. But to come back to Pascual, he was 12 when the people that discovered, who of course naturally want to convert everyone and want to, I'm not going to go into that. But he was then trained to be a priest, right? So what happened?
Yeah, they wanted to train. The reason why they took him out was to train him to be a priest. And, you know, with his perspective on things, he kind of realized after spending some years in a school near Poyo run by evangelics that that's not where it was going to go. He went to the U.S., so he went to Texas, I think. It was Kentucky, actually.
Okay.
Sorry. Where he learned English, and he studied there, I think, for a year or 2 years. And then he came back, and ever since then, he has been an absolute inspiration, his whole story to me. He's just endeavored to do everything he can for the Shiriar, to protect their culture. He's written two small books about the Shiriar people and their culture. And he has done everything he can to promote the Shiriar people. He's worked recently on a government contract. I don't exactly know the details of it right now, but he was working with the government to try and help preserve the Shiriar territory, because like every other territory in Ecuador, in rainforest, you know, there's oil underneath the ground.
Oh, yeah. So the sharks are there.
Yeah. So one of the things that he initially was doing was teaching his people the laws of the land and how they can empower themselves to protect their territory. And this is one of the things that really inspired me to set up the first foundation, which was Down to Earth International. By the way, I was supposed to be going on this work experience with Pascual, and I couldn't go at that point because a friend of mine was shot dead in Colombia.
Uh-oh.
So my family and friends didn't want me to go, and so it's taken me eight to 10 years to get here.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, but now you're here. And so the foundation, it was basically based on 10 years of your work.
Yeah, the current foundation we have is the second one I established. The first one was Down to Earth International, and set up in London with a group of friends I invited on board as fellow directors who used to work on Greenpeace campaigns with me. And then at that time, I was teaching ecology in Guatemala at two different Mayan schools. And I got sick there. That was at the time I think I had that last tumor, which was pre-malignant. So I had to go back to England and sort a few things out and recover. And I lost my first foundation. They decided to take it away from me.
Oh, okay.
But lovely. I don't know really what they thought they were going to do from that. So I just endeavored to carry on and set up the second foundation.
Which is called
Evolve to Ecology, yeah.
and you can go to the website there. We've got six projects at the moment, from tree planting to doing biodiversity surveys in the rainforest. Our work's been slowed down a little bit lately because we're in the process of registering the foundation here in Ecuador. Wow. So, you know, as usual, lawyers take a long time.
Surprise, yes. Yeah. So you're doing biodiversity.
I was just going to say, I think her kind of mission statement is great. It's dedicated to raising awareness of the cohesion between human consciousness and the ecology of all biodiversity on planet Earth. And that's so great. And I mean, obviously you're doing it in the Amazon and in Ecuador, but that's something that is translatable and important for the world.
Absolutely. But, you know, the fact is the Ecuador and the rainforest is one of the most biodiverse, rich hotspots in the world. And, you know, there's so much here of interest to biologists that, you know, is just being destroyed, you know, in a day. And, you know, thousands of hectares destroyed just for logging or for planting GM soy or for cattle grazing, raising beef for America. And the hardwood logging and the petroleum under the ground. So, you know, we've got all these adversities threatening one of the most incredible places on the planet.
And you're also collaborating with other sustainability groups, right?
Yeah. There's an organization in Europe, which is also a young organization, called the Three Force, with Teo Quartet and Fabiola, his partner. And they're doing wonderful tree planting projects where you can sponsor to plant a tree in different parts of Mexico. We're going to be doing it down here at some point too, pretty soon. And we're also collaborating with IKEAM, which is Pascual's organization.
And I actually, you just sorry to interrupt you, I will actually tell, do a blog about this on, if you go on EcuadorYourService.com, about all those different organizations. Three forces, number three, then FORCE, IKIM is IKIAM. So you're collaborating with all those people.
And Los Yapas, which is a small 20-acre reforestation project in Fatima outside Puyo, run by Gabriella. And you can actually go there and visit what they're doing. And their work is very interesting because it's a very good example of reforestation, probably the only reforestation project here in Ecuador, and it's a very important project to learn from with regarding to trying to recuperate a damaged rainforest.
So when you talk about sustainability, what do you mean by that? So what is your understanding of sustainability, for example?
Okay, well, basically, before we talk about sustainability, we have to sort of look at the fact that, you know, the way we're living right now is not the way we should be going forward, because we have an issue with the fact that we're all fed into the capitalistic system here. And you know, as Einstein once said, we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them.
That's great, yes.
And if this is so, then the process of building a better world must begin by rethinking basic assumptions and exploring root causes. So sustainability is really born out of the ecology movement. And in ecology, we have a term called carrying capacity, and a population can live within the means of the carrying capacity or beyond it.
Wonderful. Well, we need to just hold that thought, because we're going to come back right after the messages. We are listening to Carlita Shaw. This is Ecuador Your Service on the Overseas Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hold on back thoughts. Carlita, thank you again, and I will talk to you soon. I urge all your listeners to keep tuning in to Sailing Beyond Knowledge Radio.
Welcome back to Ecuador at Your Service. This is Michelle and Ashley, and you're listening to us on the Overseas Radio Network. We are talking to a fascinating woman today. Her name is Carlita Shaw, and she is the head of a foundation called Evolve to Ecology here in Ecuador. And she's regaling us with all these stories about how she started this. So let's continue a little bit. Before the break, you know, we had to take a break, but before the break, we were talking about sustainability and what that means.
Caring capacity.
So what is caring capacity? What does that mean?
Well, in ecological terms, every population, every species lives within the means of the natural resources around them, the natural carrying capacity. And a population usually lives within those means. Most species do, our species obviously doesn't, and we live beyond those means. And
what does that mean? I mean, because let's say I'm
natural
as a
resources. Okay. We're talking about consuming natural resources here, and you know, everything, every species has food, water, a living space, everything it needs. So basically, humankind is really not living within the realistic means of the Earth's natural carrying capacity because of our capitalistic lifestyle, and also because of the government trying to protect its own interests, vested interests in keeping its power.
I see.
And they don't wish to see the red margin lines there. And what we really need to be doing is rebuilding an economy that is realistically living within those boundaries, and part of that is sustainability, and we're talking about sustainability in areas of energy as well. Free energy is part of that, and it's something that has been available to us. We'll talk about that a bit later.
Right, and so you integrate
consciousness. I mean, living consciously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Consciousness is all part of this. So, you know, we're talking. Consciousness is an ecological issue here.
Yeah.
You know?
So you integrate ecology and rainforest conservation, working with indigenous people to do this through workshops, right?
I mean, one of the things we aim to do, we haven't started doing the workshops yet, is different areas in the Orient. We're going to be setting up workshops and working with different...
Sorry to interrupt you. Just so you know, for the listeners, I'm sorry to say that, the Orient in Ecuador means the jungle.
Yeah.
So just say it's not the Orient, like we're not talking Hong Kong here, we're talking the jungle, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, basically we're trying to aim for just using different skills to work with indigenous people, developing ecotourism, and we want to have a seed bank. We want to start collecting rare seeds, and Los Yapas are part of that, going to be part of that. So we're going to have a tree nursery there with them and have rare seeds and tree seedlings from the rainforest that we need to protect. Seed banks are a really important issue in sustainability as well, because you've got Monsanto and they're trying to destroy all of that.
Well, just a GM, just for the listeners who are not aware of what GM is, genetically modified seeds. And genetically modified seeds obviously are not sustainable, and they only last one season. Is that correct?
The scientists that say they yield a lot more crop, and so it's a solution to feeding the starving. But actually, this is really not the case, because the yield is really low, and it gets lower each year. Plus, there are lots of health issues regarding experiments with rats and mice fed with GM. You get cancer, all kinds of organ breakdown.
We're not meant to.
Not nature. It's definitely not nature. It's man-made, which sometimes can, sometimes is good and sometimes not so much.
That's right. And you know, it's something we really need to work on, because there are different issues here regarding sustainability. The one of the reasons why I got into setting up the Sailing Beyond Knowledge Radio is because as a researcher in ecology, I was researching all these solutions to government problems, you know, with energy and sustainable living. And, you know, there are all kinds of solutions available which have been repressed by the government.
That's really sad. So you are working with these, with all these people that actually work towards sustainability and towards free energy and something that is more important.
Yeah, actually, we're connected with Panacea University down in Australia, Ashworth Hallace, who is a great colleague of mine and a free energy researcher and engineer. I'm also connected with a lot of other free energy inventors, like Professor John Searle, Jason Verbelli, who's one of our youngest researchers in free energy here, who's got amazing websites available with learning resources. We'll talk about that more in a moment.
But your projects also demonstrate that localized sustainability actually can work as a business model. It actually, you know, so that, you know, people can think, oh yeah, this is actually to empower individuals and communities to transform humanity and also creating a cleaner planet.
Well, it's the old adage, teach a man how to fish, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, capitalism creates competition. And I mean, there's good things that come out of that, high standards, right? But, you know, it also it puts emphasis on competition outside of sustainability, whereas, you know, we really need to focus on community. And capitalism has a way of fragmenting communities. And the reason why we need to embrace sustainability right now is because it binds and repairs communities. And there's a lot of community spirit here in Ecuador. And nothing draws community spirit more than localized food production.
Of course.
And there's so much food diversity here and strong community in the indigenous community. And this is really important for us. And you know, the Ecuadorian population runs mainly in rural areas, and the food production is mostly organic here.
Yes.
And it's produced in a very sustainable way. And there's also a great variety of alternative health products and rainforest herbal medicines, which are encouraging a liberty here that you do not get in the U.S. or Europe.
Right. Well, you know what's really strange is that I recently, when I first came here, I came from California, from Palm Springs, and I was, you know, all into organic stuff and everything has to be organic and blah, blah, blah. And I went to these little markets and I kept asking them, I speak Spanish and I was thinking, you know, is this organico? And they don't understand what that means. They really don't. So they were going like, organico? Yeah, it's organico. And then I said, well, do you do this with, like, do you use chemicals? And then the one guy, because I buy from him all the time, you know, said to me, let me show you my farm. And I went on, you know, a little, it was a butt-numbing ride. Let me tell you, like, boom, 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 boom. And then he showed me, you know, his little farm. It was a tiny little farm. And he had, like, these products, like, for example, one row of this type of vegetable, then one row of herbs that would counteract the bugs that would normally eat this other veg. And it was on, and I'm thinking, why don't they do that everywhere? I mean, because, of course, here they can't afford the chemicals. That's the big problem. And it's to our benefit is that they can't afford those big planes that go and dust every day. And that's it's the food here is unbelievable.
Yeah, I wanted to really, just draw on Helena Norberg Hodges' work, which I think Ashley will appreciate as well. Helena Norberg Hodge was editor and ecological, the Ecologist magazine, and author of Ancient Futures. And she studied with Noam Chomsky, and she's
from. Yeah, I know of her, absolutely.
Well, I just want to quote from her. At a deep psychological level, convincing young people that they will get the respect, admiration, love that they are looking for through consumerism is a manipulation of a deep human instinct to want to belong. Advertising and the media reinforce this message, in the process destroying the community structures that provide people with the affirmation that they need. We have evolved in groups, deeply interdependent and connected, and the separation and competition of the modern world is antithetical to our deepest needs.
Wow, that's pretty deep. Yeah, she was with Chomsky.
Yeah, she studied with Chomsky, and then she went off and around to study with the Tibetan people, and that's what her recent book is on ancient futures. It's kind of a similar story to Ashley's work, actually.
Wonderful, that's incredible. So we need to go to commercial in a little bit, but we are talking. You know, I know that happens. We're talking with Carlita Shah, who is a fascinating woman, and that was a wonderful quote. That was really absolutely incredible. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Shaman's Apprentice Project.
Second hour.
That is, you know, that's just incredible. But so stay tuned. You know, this was unbelievable. We love to have you here. You are wonderful. Stay tuned. This is Ashley and Michelle on Equator at Your Service on the Overseas Radio Network. Welcome back to Ecuador at Your Service. This is Michelle Nashley, and you're listening to us live on the Overseas Radio Network. We have the great privilege to have today Carlita Shaw, who is talking about many things, and amongst other things, evolved ecology. And we were just recently, before the break, talking about a lady called Mrs. Hodge.
Yeah, Helena Hodge.
Helena, that's H, like Helena, H-O-D-G-E. So if you want to Google her.
We'll provide links to her information.
Absolutely. Now, we needed to talk a little bit about the...
Shaman's Apprentice.
Yes, absolutely. So what is that? So
I'm so excited about this project.
Okay. Initially, this came about, again, being inspired by Pascual and his story and the Shuya people and the fact that rainforest medicine is really important and the pharmaceutical industries have been trying to destroy their knowledge and again to patent and make money. There was I can't remember the man's name, a documentary I've forgotten his name, but it was called The Shaman's Apprentice, and I read his book, and he was very young and naive, and he was studying rainforest medicine, and he talked about a tribe he visited and then went back 12 years later and discovered that the medicine men had been told by a pharmaceutical company not to use the medicine.
Can you imagine?
And gave them these pills instead and said that if they carried on using their medicinal plants, it was akin to devil worship. So,
it's unbelievable.
Was his name Mark Plotkin?
That's the guy. Thank you, Ashley.
Yeah, the ethnobotanist, yeah.
His work inspired me too. So basically this project is an idea and inspiration drawn from those aspects of the problems we have. And also last year there were 14 Peruvian shamans that were systematically murdered. And
say that again.
Last year in the news, there were 14 Peruvian shamans that were murdered by some religious group. We really do need to preserve shamanic medicinal plant knowledge and for many, many reasons. And so I came up with this project, which involves amazing technology as well. There's a scanner you can use for the three-dimensional scanning. So, I mean, as an ecologist, I trained a lot in plant identification with Richard Lindsay. And, it's really important to have a good database with all these rainforest medicinal plants in there. And we can use a three-dimensional scanner to scan in these plants so researchers and biologists and botanists can log into the database, access the plants, learn how to identify these medicinal plants, and you have all the ecological knowledge there aside with them and what the indigenous people use them for and the pollinators and the
And it's going to be like a virtual library, right?
It will be a huge archive and virtual library that any academic or researcher can explore and learn about the knowledge of these indigenous medicinal plants. And it could be used in so many countries and not just Ecuador, Brazil and everywhere. And it would be a great archive. And I've not seen anything like it since I've come up with the project.
You're just amazing. We just love you.
Yeah. So, we want to do this for the Shuya people initially, and we've been just documenting the rainforest plants that they use just by hand so far, because we need this 3D scanner, basically,
so,
to get this going.
So these images are actually going to be accompanied with ecological data, right?
And everyone can learn about the plants, the medicinal uses, and the ecological symbiotic in pollinators, insects, animals, bats, that kind of thing. So it would just be a three-dimensional ecological library, basically.
Wow.
Well, if any of our listeners want to try to help you get that 3D imaging system, there's I'm sure, a way that we can help on our website at ecuadoratyourservice.com. You never know.
That would wonderful. And the other aspect to the project is that Pasquale Conchicore was telling me that some of the young Shiria leave the territory because they're inquisitive and they want to see what it's like outside the rainforest. But they end up in shanty towns or becoming part of the military. So
lovely.
Called the Shaman's Apprentice Project is so that we can get these young Shiria people to work with rainforest organizations. So we need any rainforest organizations or conservation organizations willing to sponsor a young Shiria person for 6 months or 3 months or a year even, to give them the skills that they need that they could bring back to serve this project, because they will be in charge of, the Shiria people will be in charge of this database, and anyone that wants to subscribe to it academically, all that money will go to the Shiria people preserving their territory and their knowledge.
If you wanted to sponsor somebody, how would that work, and about how much might it cost? Do you have any ideas?
People just need to approach Evolved to Ecology and talk to us about collaborating. The thing about the project is that you can donate, but we're setting up a donation page specifically for that project at the moment. And then we have another project for 45 children in Vencedores, Quechua children. Pascual wants to set an indigenous language and ecology school, and people can actually sponsor a child's education for there, and that's another project that people can look up again on Evolved Ecology.
So basically just go to Evolved Ecology,
yeah.
And you'll get all that information. But another use for the data is to protect the knowledge of the medicinal plants, because you know, one thing about Ecuador is that Ecuador has the most incredible variety of medicinal plants, and they are, and one of the things that was so surprised when I met shamans here, and when I was in Cotacachi, which is a great town, but very boring. Anyway, no, I shouldn't say that. You know, well, it's good if you like to look out the window and knit, but anyways, but they do have this incredible knowledge about medicinal plants. And the shaman, one of the shamans was telling me how they went to, you know, a regular hospital, and they had all these pills. And then the shamans were like, oh, wait a minute, we have these medicinal things that work faster and better. So, you know, you always think that for some reason, I don't know, I think it's a very common misconception for North Americans to think that somehow Western medicine works faster and better.
Wow.
But it's not true. And they were saying how you know, they were in the hospital and they had all these problems. It's just, well, wait a minute, we have these plants that work faster and better than your stuff that has all these residues that'll stay in your kidneys and you'll get your kidney failure. So that was amazing.
Yeah, well, the pharmaceutical industry, most of the medicinal medicine that they provide is synthesized from rainforest medicine plants. So, you know,
With residues.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's, you know, that's incredible. So, you know, so you're working with these people doing all that stuff,
yeah,
with ecology school and those 45 people, is that correct?
45 children. I'm just in the process of making a small slideshow for people so that they can see a bit more. We did have some videos of these children singing in Quechua, which was really beautiful, but that all disappeared when I was recently robbed. So just setting up a little slideshow for that project there. There's just other things I want to mention.
Well, in the Shaman's Apprentice Project, it's the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
Oh, no, that's basically a site which has a data which red lists all the endangered species.
I see, okay.
One of the processes of a biodiversity survey,
okay,
which anyone can participate in doing with us.
Right.
It, basically recording data, insects, animals, plants, birds, reptiles, amphibians, everything. And when we've got all that data, you can discover new species all the time in the rainforest. It's incredible. So it's a very exciting thing to be a part of. And when we've got that data, we can submit it to the IUCN website. And when you've got really rare species, you can get a special protection for the different territories.
Now, have you personally been to the jungle? Have you been?
Yeah, I have, but I haven't yet been able to go right into the Shiriyar territory. The last time I was supposed to go, I got hit by a car.
Oh, it's lovely.
Pascual goes in every now and again. The other issue we have is that the flights from Shell are really expensive. Now, Pascual is actually right now in the process of getting a plane for the Shiriyar people.
Oh, wow. Oh, we want to know about that.
Times when, you know, people get bitten by a snake and they do need to come out and they do need help.
Yeah, that's the one thing for me. I'm just saying, I'm not exactly like a jungle person myself. I mean, I appreciate, I want to preserve it, and I know that's there, but I'm not. And I think that it's something that's a little bit, for a lot of people, you got to be a strong person.
When you go there, you have to expect simple living conditions, and you might be shocked by some of the things that you see, but it's experience.
Yeah, with simple living conditions, I remember, not exactly,
it doesn't mean only one bathroom, Michelle.
It's something that is not really, we'll see about that, but I would love to visit it, if they had sort of a deluxe tour or something. So,
oh boy.
We'll be back. When we come back, we're going to talk about free energy, and we're going to talk about how everything, ecology, many, many different...
I'd like to also mention Trevor Jenkins.
We absolutely going to talk all about that. So stay tuned. This is a fascinating interview. We love you. Stay tuned for the next hour. We are with Carlita Shaw, and you're listening to Michelle Nashley on Ecuador Your Service Overseas Radio Network. I'm Ashley, and you're listening to us on the Overseas Radio Network. We have great privilege and honor to have with us today Carlita Shaw, who has a foundation called Evolve to Ecology. And if you want to know about the foundation, it's evolvetoecology.com. And we are talking about all things ecological and sustainability and things like that. And in this hour, we will be talking about consciousness and free energy as well. So welcome back. You have so much to say, Carlita. So,
I know. I really want to give a little bit of a recap if somebody missed the first show, because besides just Evolve to Ecology, she talked about working with an indigenous group of people that are called the Shiawa. Can you pronounce it for me? Shiawar? And also doing a school in an area in the rainforest in Vencedores. She talked about the Shaman Apprentice Project. She talked about seed banks and carrying capacity. I mean, it was so, so wonderful. So if you missed it, go to the archives and replay it. And also, we are going to do a blog with a transcript about all the different ways you can learn more about what Carlita is talking about. So I just wanted to plug the first hour, because it was so chock full of information.
So welcome back, Carlita. We were talking a little bit about sustainability, right? And this is something that is really a buzzword right now that everyone is very interested about hearing. And a lot of people move to Ecuador because they feel that this is a country that is very concerned with that kind of thing.
It's a great place here. There's a lot of resources, and Ecuador is abundant in water, right?
Yes.
Wonderful waterfalls here.
Water is the next oil. Mm. That's what they're saying.
That's an interesting issue as well, because it's being bought up and privatized. Well, that's a whole other subject.
Yes, absolutely.
But actually, going into the water, we have a really interesting interview on sailingbeyondknowledge.podomatic.com.
Okay, so let's repeat that. sailingbeyondknowledge.podomatic.com. It's Podomatic. Okay, Podomatic.com.
Yeah, again, links will be provided in the.
Right.
A man called Trevor James Constable, who worked with the Navy for 40 years, and he developed techniques based on Willem Reich's work, Engineering the Ether. Now, Trevor James Constable has a website called rainengineering.com, and the technology he has there is incredible. I mean, people don't know this. It's just amazing. He's basically engineered devices based on Reich's work to create rain where there are deserts.
Wow.
Without any chemicals, this is just a scientific knowledge of the ether. That exists, but again, this is a suppressed science.
Well, and I'm sure that a lot of governments would like to use that for other purposes.
they have other ways of engineering the weather. But his story is really interesting because their work is fascinating, and it's worth looking up that website, and also you can go to the interview on Sailing Beyond Knowledge.
Because William Wright was the one who did all that thing about argon energy.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Argon energy is a really fascinating subject again, and it leads into free energy. And, this is something that Tesla, and both Wright and Tesla are connected with.
So for people that are not familiar with this, because you're so into this and you're, a scientist, and, William Wright and Tesla were both people that were pioneers in manipulating, basically
finding energy
out of nothing, the ether, which is just the air, and making it free.
Yeah, but technologies are really important right now, because as an example, in the US alone, which is 5% of the world's population, consumes 5% of the world's nuclear power.
Gosh.
So the amount of nuclear waste created per year is 40 grams. That's an incredible amount. And then it seems lunacy when you learn that it takes 3 million years for nuclear waste to decay.
Josh.
Globally, we have 438 nuclear power stations on planet Earth right now. And one power station produces 3,000 tons of nuclear waste per year. This means that altogether, 1,314,000 tons of nuclear waste is generated globally each year. And not only that, but it costs $20 billion just to produce one nuclear waste repository.
Wow.
For one repository. And there's no accounting for the thousands of nuclear warheads that are in existence. So while this is all going on, we in the free energy movement are called crackpots and lunatics.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing to consider is that the Patron is just sheltered more than a million. And they're not going to be happy when someone comes along with a free energy device.
Could you imagine? Well, what's one thing I've always found strange, because I used to live in the California desert, in Palm Springs, California, and I never understood why everybody did not have solar panels and those windmills there that produce energy. Why not? Why are we so conditioned to thinking that we need to pay? And by the way, when you live in Palm Springs, in the summer, for example, you could pay up to $800 or $900 a month in bills for air conditioning. It's just the way it is. I mean, when it's 120 degrees or 125 degrees, let me tell you, the house needs to be, I never got that.
No, it's interesting. It's a certain way of something, you know. And that goes on to what free energy really means, because it challenges what people are taught in mainstream physics and universities, you know, that the law of conservation of energy is what you can take out of the system isn't any more than what you put into the system, which is not quite true. And again, if you want to learn more about this, a great introduction to free energy, I did an interview with Patrick Kelly on Sailing Beyond Knowledge, episode 23, Scratching the Surface of Free Energy Devices with Patrick Kelly, and he goes through so many hundreds of devices that are available and their output and the inventors and their stories. So,
and this is on Sailing Beyond
Knowledge.podomatic.
Yeah, so sailingbeyondknowledge.podomatic, podomatic.com.
There's also a free energy page on Evolved Ecology with all these interviews.
So we'll come back. We'll talk about free energy, which is a fascinating subject. I mean, I can't believe, you know, we're very, very happy to have you here. We are talking to Carlita Shaw, and we'll be back talking about free energy and what it means to the population in Earth. Stay tuned. And this is Ecuador, your service on the Overseas Radio Network. Overseas Radio Network. We have the great privilege today to have Carlita Shaw talking about all kinds of things ecological, and also we just before the break, we're talking about free energy and what that really means. Now, free energy is an incredible concept here, you know, in Ecuador, but also the rest of the world. So, tell us a little bit again. Now, what does free energy really mean?
Yeah, as we were talking earlier, that in physics, you know, the law of conservation is you cannot take more out of the system than you can put in, which
yes.
is not quite true. And, you know, a lot of science is suppressed by the government, and new physics is being suppressed, but it can't be suppressed anymore. It's coming out. And, you know, one of the simple things, simple examples of free energy are not only just solar and wind power and wave power, but just in terms of thinking of an aerial, you know, we ourselves generate voltage, you know, the voltage at the top of our heads is higher than the voltage that comes from our feet. So, you know, electricity travels through our bodies. And there was a German scientist, Hermann Blasten, who showed how you simply can extract energy, pulling it out from the air or the ether with an aerial. And the output...
So, what is it?
Tesla introduced is already being used in a malevolent way by mainstream science.
Right, of course.
So going on from that, you know, there are some really fascinating people like Sir John Searle. And
how do you spell that?
S-E-A-R-L. And his websites are www.swallowcommand.com.
Wow, yes.
And he's also had a documentary made by Bradley Lockman, and that can be seen at www.sirjohnsearlstory.com. SirJohnSearlStory.com.
And by the way, we're going to totally do all of this back. Yeah.
We better, because I can't keep it straight.
Then there's our young free energy researcher, Jason, who's a good friend of mine, and he has a fantastic YouTube channel where he demonstrates and builds devices for people.
Wow.
And you can find that on the Real Verbs and YouTube Real Verbs, The Real Verbs.
And it's at THEREALVERBZ.
Yes.
So basically go on YouTube and yeah, Z, like Zsa Zsa.
Yeah.
And so, of course, YouTube, I love YouTube. So just go on YouTube and they'll get the Real Verbs and THEREALVERBZ.
Yeah, so John Searle's a really interesting subject. And again, we interviewed him on Sailing Beyond Knowledge.
Uh-huh.
So you can find an interview with him there. And we interviewed Bradley Lockman. And basically, Searle's story is really fascinating. He's from England and he was an orphan. He had a really trying childhood, trying and challenging childhood. And he is an absolutely phenomenally intelligent man. And it's really interesting how his information came about and how he started building these devices, which are electromagnetic devices that include neodymium, which is a special form of magnet, which doesn't stand for...
Sorry, what is that called?
Are you hearing that interference?
Yes. And the...
Oh, yeah. So basically, neodymium magnets are not just North and South Pole magnets. They have a multitude of poles.
Uh-huh.
He built a device which is kind of a donut toroid shape with these rotating revolving magnets around them. And this device, he discovered, not only produces a great output of energy just by using these magnets, it's called the Searle Electromagnetic Generator, the SEG. And basically, this device he discovered by accident can levitate.
Oh, wow. Welcome back to Ecuador Here Service. This is Michelle Nashley, and you're listening to us on the Overseas Radio Network. We have the great privilege today to have Carlita Shaw, who's talking about all kinds of ecology and just sustainability, and, of course, the jungle here, the Amazon forest in Ecuador. And just before the break, we were just a little bit talking about
free energy.
And what else do you have to say? You have a little bit to say about that?
Oh, yeah, no. Basically, we can provide the links to what we're talking about online because the resources are just so great and it's such a huge subject to cover, we don't have time.
Wonderful, yes.
We'll move on from there, like you suggested, and go on to exopolitics, which is connected to free energy anyway.
So what is exopolitics? It's EXO, exopolitics, is that correct?
Uh-huh. It's a really fascinating field, and it's connected to many issues that we've talked about already. There are now 30 exopolitics organizations around the world, and there are people such as Alfred Lambermont Weber, whose background is as a lawyer, a judge, in fact, and he established exopolitics movement. And basically, you can find his details at exopolitics.com.
Uh-huh.
And there's now an exopolitics university.
Oh, wow.
Exopoliticsuniversity.org. And I interviewed Alfred last year. He just came back from Mexico, where he had been working with a university that was putting exopolitics in its syllabus.
Oh, wow.
This is really amazing stuff. And basically...
Tell us a little bit, what is exopolitics?
Basically, exopolitics is a movement that is initially founded in the theory that there is an interdimensional universe, a multidimensional universe.
Wow.
Where not only there are physical non-terrestrial beings in existence, but non-physical beings.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Okay. So beyond your five senses, basically.
Yeah. Alfred wrote a book called Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. And this is just amazing because it ties in with the fact that, you know, there are current politics, secret politics, which is dealing with non-terrestrial beings as well.
Oh, wow.
And, you know,
okay.
Alfred has established a movement also to stop the weaponization of space, because there's a lot of satellites in space that carry a nuclear weapon.
Yes, yeah.
And so...
I'm sure every country has...
Yeah. Being a lawyer, you know... He basically set up the space peace and space treaty, and again, you know, these are all issues that are just kind of mind blowing, really.
Yeah, no kidding.
The reason why he set up the peace and space treaty is because he works with a lot of ex-NASA scientists and people who have secret information that, you know, because they're whistleblowers, they've worked for the government, such as Dr. Andrew Basiago, who's part of Project Pegasus, which is a quantum space.
Of course, yeah.
I travel project.
Right.
And they're trying to lobby the government to disclose that because, you know, it ties in with... the current new physics, quantum physics, and the fact that, you know, there is time travel and...
Yes, the Montauk chair.
Quantum travel, absolutely. And again, that also ties in with the work of Nassim Harriman.
And which Nassim Harriman is actually, for the people who don't know who he is, his name is Nassim, N-A-S-S-I... M. Haramein, H-A-R-A-M-E-I-N. And he's a quantum physics specialist, but he also talks about incredible developments recently in how you relate to the Earth and how the Earth relates to you and the whole universe in general. So he's an incredible guy. If you go on YouTube, you can actually just, or Google him, you know, Nassim Haramein.
There's also a four-hour presentation he did in California last year, which is also in Sailing Beyond Knowledge, about his recent discoveries. He was doing some research and work about the vacuum density inside a particle in relation to just trying to get a synthesis of what a black hole is and how you can use it to travel through
time. It's fascinating. Well, you know, one of the things about Nassim Haramein is that he is clearly a sane person, you know, because but come on, between you and me, if someone said to you, you can travel, you know, you'd be like, you're crazy. But then I would have thought you'd be crazy 20 years ago if you said that you can talk to someone in the same way you talk through Skype. You understand? Like, so it's kind of, things are very, very relative in the world.
Absolutely. And he just demonstrates through pure mathematics these issues.
Right.
You know, through pure science.
Right.
You can't argue.
You can't argue with it, because he's very connected with everything. And also, he explains it in a very logical way. So it's not like you're going like, oh, this is a crackpot thing. It's the end of the world. And you know, extraterrestrials are going to, you know.
Right. So he explains mathematical formulas which demonstrate wormholes and their existence, which act as interdimensional portals for everything, connecting everything in the universe. And we live in an interactive infrastructure of dimensions which we share with other multidimensional beings.
Right, which is kind of hard for us to understand.
Yes.
Well, it is, because, you know, the problem that I guess we have when you're not, you know, that evolved, or when you're just living in the normal world, is that you think that everything is your five senses. Uh-huh. So you maybe don't understand that there's other levels, you know?
Absolutely. Which also goes back to Trevor James Constable's work, because he also spent 40 years developing infrared and ultraviolet cameras that have photographed beings that look like giant jellyfish that live in the infrared and the ultraviolet realm.
Are you serious?
Yes, and then there's a book he wrote called The Cosmic Pulse of Life, and it's all about these beings and these
unseen
dimensions of the human eye.
And so you can't actually see them, but they exist around you, is that correct?
That's right. And you can also find photos of these objects if you Google the famous NASA tether incident, because NASA took Trevor James Constable's work. They developed a camera that does the same thing, attached it to their space shuttles, and from ground control you can see through the camera infrared, and you can see these objects that look like giant jellyfish, and it's almost as if you're looking at the deep sea, you know. And there was an incident where this tether came off free from the space shuttle, and a ground control can see all these strange objects moving towards the tether, which is 15 miles long, so it acts like a ruler, and you can see how large these objects are.
Wow.
The astronauts themselves can't see these beings because, you know, they're not looking through the camera. It's infrared and ultraviolet.
So basically the camera understands wavelengths that you hunt. Oh, that's what it is. Okay, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing stuff. And also, you can find a film which Jose Escamilla made called Moon Rising and Luna, which has a real color footage of the moon. The moon, as we have used to seeing it,
right,
filmed in black and white.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it has color hues like Earth, and it has a very thin atmosphere, and there are structures on the moon, such as Stonehenge and Egyptian-like statues that you can see.
This is... this is... Wow, this is... So where can you get this stuff?
Well, Jose Escamillo is another person. He's a friend of mine. I interviewed him as well. He's like a cutting-edge Hollywood documentary filmmaker. He made UFO, The Greatest Story Ever Denied, and Moon Rising and Luna. And these are amazing documentaries that show wonderful photographs of the moon in full color. It's the first time ever you're going to see the moon in full color.
So why can't you see the moon? What I mean, because I always think of the moon as being silver.
Yes.
Because that's what you see with your eye. Okay.
NASA will not permit these full color photos because they show other objects.
Oh, I see.
Such as the Stonehenge structures and statues and these other objects, which are just.
Okay, but when you see the moon, like if I look at the moon myself, yeah. I see the moon silver. That's or you know, and I see a little bit of, you know, darker colors. But how come then I can't, with my eye, I can't see it?
With the close-up camera technology that NASA have, you can see the full color hues
wow.
of the moon, which are like Earth. There's colors like browns and greens, slight browns and greens.
Wow.
And more of this is explained in Jose Escamilla's documentary. You can go to tblnfilms.com. That's TBLN for November films.com.
Oh, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I'm going from the moon to the sun.
Uh-huh.
This is all included in Exopolitics. This is why
right.
know, it's a really important subject, because there's so much out there that we are not allowed to know.
Right.
And you can find out now because the internet has resources there.
Right. The internet now is
basically uncovering the truths for us.
It's incredible because we used to be only, you know, guided by the news that was fed to us through television, or now we have information that is much more deeper. That's and right. also, you know, you can't censor it anymore.
No, you can't. And it's really quite interesting because you can go to NASA's SOHO website, which is a website where they have special cameras that photograph the sun every 10 minutes.
Okay.
And the website is stereo, as in stereo, .gs for sugar, F for Freddie, C for Charlie, .nasa.gov. And there's a site there where they photograph the sun every 10 to 15 minutes. Now, if you look at these photographs, you can download them.
Okay.
Put them in Photoshop and you can load them up. And around the sun, you will see objects the size of planet Earth that revolve around the sun.
Wow, that's deep.
Oh, man. Okay.
My life will never be the same after this show.
These objects were first discovered by Dr. Norman Berggren, who worked with NASA for a while.
What's his name?
Dr. Norman Berggren.
Berggren, okay.
Uh-huh. And he wrote the book The Ringmakers of Saturn, because he first saw these objects in Saturn's rings.
Okay.
And I've talked to a man called James Horrock about these objects. He calls them electromagnetic vehicles. Now, each one is the size of planet Earth.
Wow.
And what they seem to be doing is farming off the sun's
energy,
coronal mass ejections.
Okay.
So whenever you see a really large coronal mass ejection coming out from the sun, of which there was one last June, around June the 6th, I think, and I just so happened that day to be...
This is last June of...
Last year.
Okay, huh?
And you can see that suddenly there are 200 of these objects around the sun, as if bees around honey, farming this energy. And what they do is they buffer the coronal mass ejections against Earth. So they're actually protecting the Earth from these mass ejections and harnessing that energy. I don't know in what way.
Wow.
And so all this talk about the sun's activity going to be a threat to planet Earth, this evidence, I don't think so.
This is just like mind-blowing. This is mind-blowing information, you know. Thank God. Well, we'll be back. We need to go to commercial break. We'll be back. We're talking to Carlita Shaw about things that are very interesting and controversial. Stay tuned. And then we're also going to talk about your hypnotherapy as well. Okay, so stay tuned. This is Michelle Nashley. You're listening to us on Ecuador Your Service Overseas Radio Network. Thank you. Your service. This is Michelle Nashley, and you're listening to us on the Overseas Radio Network. We have a fantastic guest for you today, Carlita Shaw, who talked a little bit about evolved to ecology and the shamans in the Apprentice Project in the jungle in the Orient, which is we call here in Codorn Jungle, and we were talking about free energy, and now we are on to another subject. We're talking a little bit.
Consciousness.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about that, because you're a fascinating woman and you have so much to say.
Sorry.
Yes. And so consciousness, what are we dealing with, the evolution of consciousness?
Yeah, basically, in order to understand and assimilate the subjects we've just talked about, specifically ecology and exopolitics and free energy, it's all about shifting consciousness. Which is something a lot of us are aware that we need to do in order to shift from this archaic, destructive paradigm to a new way of being, which is more harmonious with planet Earth and accepting that we're not the only planet or beings in the universe. We share it with other life forms as well. And this is all part of expanding our conscious awareness. So this is a subject that we talk about a lot in sustainablenowledge.podomatic.com. And my friend Neil Kramer is a great speaker on consciousness. If you want to go to his website, it's neilkramer.com. And he's just come up with a wonderful book called The Unfoldment. And that just ties in with metaphysics, mysticism, and esoteric knowledge.
Wow.
And the unfoldment is about the natural human process. You know, every single individual has their own spiritual journey. And, you know, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another.
Sure.
And, you know, it's all about transcending our conditioning by society, which is trying to keep us in a control system. And it's about trying to transcend our own shadow sides, but not embracing the shadow side, not transcending as in denying it, you know, because we're all imperfect and we don't need to be perfect. And it's just
and you know what, that's actually, sorry to interrupt you, that's actually a part that is very common when you do any kind of spiritual work, is to embrace your dark side or your shadow. And Jung talked about that. He's a very, very big proponent of that, Carl Jung. And I have a little bit of a problem just because I don't really know what would my shadow side be. I think I'm just too simple to have a shadow side. But, you know, that's absolutely part of the spiritual journey.
Absolutely. It's the shamanic path to embrace the darkness. And, you know, most of our training, you know, for our lifetimes, are learnt through pain and grief and depression and all the negative emotions, you know, and in order to come to the light and appreciate happiness and joy and peace and tranquility is to embrace all of that. And human consciousness is so fragmented by our conditioning, you know, we can't help that. And we've lost our connection with planet Earth and with the universe. And this is why all these subjects really do integrate, because ecology is consciousness is an ecological issue. And I think everybody can see that, you know, from some of the stuff we talked about. And, you know, we're sort of struggling with this matrix of what we're struggling against, which is the mainstream system trying to keep control of its power, that there are many human beings that are ready to move forward. And you know, everyone knows this by now. I mean, it's out on the internet, so...
Right, and a lot of people that are evolving, you know, are clearly, like, for the younger people, my nieces and nephews, for example, they're very aware of what's going on. They're very aware of how the huge shift in consciousness in the whole planet, you know.
And that's really interesting, because I'm learning about the work of Mary Rodwell, who we'll give a link to in the information as well. And she, her work is very interesting, because it is connected to Dr. Alfred Lambert Weber's work, in that she's interviewed and had clients. She's also a regression hypnotherapist.
Okay.
She's
sorry to interrupt you. What is a regression hypnotherapist?
Okay. Well, hypnotherapy is all about going into these subjects as well, and which is why I'm drawn to it, because it's about recovering and healing the fragments of the human mind. And
okay.
Also it goes into interdimensional realities. And Mary Rodwell's work is really interesting, because she interviewed a lot of children who have had some really interesting experiences with extraterrestrial.
Okay, all right.
On an interdimensional level, like okay. through dreams and other unique experiences.
Okay.
And she believes that because we're moving forward in human consciousness, we are being communicated with on other levels now through our children, because they're our future, and they're building, they're rebuilding where we need to shift to.
And I do believe, this is personally, I do believe that are the people that are being born, the children, are actually much more involved than we were.
Oh,
I mean,
so
you know,
much more involved, aren't they? And they yeah. seem to be so wise.
Yeah, yeah, and understanding what's going on. So you think that's part of the whole shifting in consciousness?
Absolutely. You know, it's just a natural evolutionary process, and also I think it's just something that really needs to happen, because we're at a crossroads in our humankind and planetary survival. So, you know, it's no wonder that the children are much more evolved than us, and you know, some have some really interesting abilities too.
Yes, that's what they say. Mm. Yeah, and they also say that their DNA is changing, as it's more evolved, extra strands.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So, you know, this is all stuff that ties in with ecology, consciousness, and free energy, because we, in order to embrace free energy, we also need to move forward, you know,
right.
from the being addicted to power and greed to a more equilibrium of living, a more sort of holographic form of society rather than a pyramidical hierarchical structure.
Well, that's pretty deep. Okay. Well, so now you are also a hypnotherapist,
yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah.
So how did that start? How did you...
Okay, again, you know, because I was inspired by the work of Mary Rodwell and other people, and I've just been interested in consciousness ever since I was a child. When I was 14, I had an operation to remove a tumor, and I had an out-of-body experience, and I was taken by a being to a place in the universe.
Wow.
Where there were these revolving spheres, and each one contained a part of my life that may or may not happen. And some of those instances that I was taken to did happen, and some of them didn't. It's kind of like, again, ties in with Nassim Harriman, you know,
right.
and quantum physics. You know, you can have all these parallel
on different levels.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And they may or may not happen. And,
okay, I understand that, yeah.
So I've just always been very spiritual and had some strange abstract experiences, which is why I got into hypnotherapy. And I've always been interested in psychology as well. And just the fact that, you know, I feel that in order to shift to this new way of being, we need to heal ourselves.
Oh, right. So you need to heal the part of you that's been used to the five senses and that kind of stuff, and to evolve from there.
And to get in touch with our inner voice and our intuition, which is really connected to that divine energy, you know, in the universe. And in order to do that, you need to bypass the intellectual mind. And that's what hypnotherapy does. To do this kind of work, you can put a person
okay.
into deep trance by relaxing them deeply. And that's what hypnotherapy does. It just deals with relaxing the person deeply and taking them to a level where they can do the work bypassing the critical mind.
Wow. And so now, can anybody be hypnotized?
Yeah,
or is that what you call it? You call it hypnotized, right?
I mean,
is that
hypnosis? Most people can be hypnotized. I mean, it's also used by doctors to control pain and deal with all kinds of issues
okay.
like anxiety, allergies, and pain control. But I don't recommend anybody with schizophrenia or severe bipolar to be...
Like if you're Sybil, you shouldn't do it.
If you're what?
If you're Sybil. Well, you're not pretty. Yeah, that's an American thing. Sybil was a woman with multiple personalities.
Yeah, multiple person, not good.
Okay.
most of the results we get are always really positive, and anybody can do hypnotherapy for anxiety, depression, trauma. It's great for trauma or abuse recovery.
So basically it cleanses you, is that correct?
Yeah.
That's just a form of cleansing,
well,
so you can move on?
It's a form of neuro-linguistic programming.
Okay.
I trained with Janice Erickson, who's also...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Keith Livingston and Richard Bandler, the NLP.
Oh, Richard Bandler is the big guy for NLP.
Neuro-linguistic programming.
Of course.
So we integrate neuro-linguistic programming in hypnosis. So during hypnosis, we use that language, and we can... For example, usually in a consultation, I give a mini present life regression where the person can go back and deal with any traumas or issues or emotional issues by replaying that memory.
Wow.
What happens is we ask them to disengage and rewind the memory, and I use certain techniques to apply that. And what it does is it rewrites the neural brain pathways and disassociates that emotion from the person, so they become clear.
Okay. And then once they become free of it, obviously that leaves their body, or that leaves their consciousness, and they can be free to open up to better things. Is that correct?
To embrace their full potential.
That's incredible. So how long have you been doing that for?
Only 3 years.
3 years? Yeah. And where did you start?
In San Francisco. I trained with Janice Erickson, she's a master therapist with Richard Bandler.
Richard Bandler. Keep things, they're the big guys, of course, in San Francisco. Well, this has been wonderful. This has been an amazing, amazing 2 hours dealing with Carlita Shah, who's been talking to us about evolved ecology and also about the Shaman Apprentice Project, and also about your hypnotherapy and free energy as well. So thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it. And stay tuned next week. We're going to have a more interesting stuff. We are hopefully going to be talking a little bit about tourism, a little bit of a different subject. So you were listening to Michelle and Ashley and Carlita Shah. This was Ecuador at Your Service on the Overseas Radio Network.